Hear that? That's the sound of the engines that make America hum. The sound of our state's surging manufacturing industry. Our Senator John Fetterman stood strong for workers. He voted to protect Pennsylvania jobs, stop the needless waste of American energy, and hold big polluters accountable. Thank you, Senator Fetterman, for fighting for us. Paid for by Environmental Defense Fund.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Check, check, check. Let's get it. Welcome to the Dear Son Show. We have meaningful conversations about life through the lens of fatherhood. It's for fathers, those with fathers, and the fatherless, so nobody's left out. These are the conversations I want my sons to access as they grow through life into manhood, so no topics are off limits. I'm your only host, but I got an amazing guest. We got Xavier Miller. Welcome to the Dear Son Show. How are you, my brother?
I'm doing great, man. Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Thank you for the invite.
Thank you for, I'm glad it came together.
Yeah, right.
It came together, right? Yeah, man. How you been? How's the week going?
It's going pretty good. Staying busy, you know, chilling with the family, working. Same old, I'm simple.
Yeah.
Not too much.
Simple. There's a beautiful thing, a beautiful element to being simple.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate simplicity at this stage of life.
Me too.
Since you introduced it, man, let's talk about your home right now, and then we'll jump back into your mm-hmm. upbringing. Who's in the house right now?
So now it's me, my wife, my daughter, just us three right now.
Yeah,
working, you know, enjoying each other's company. We live out in a rural town, not too much going on.
Yeah,
it's completely opposite of how I was living, let's say 3-4 years ago when I first came to Dallas.
Sure.
Because it's a 180, but I love it.
Yeah,
I love it, man.
Let's get right to it. Would you come? Well, let's not start there. I want to go there. I want to go to where you're from, because I don't know if that's where you came from.
Okay.
Where'd you grow up?
So I'm from Chicago.
Chi-town.
Yeah. The west side of Chicago, born and raised.
Should I pat you down when you came in? With the sticks. Sticks on that?
No. We good. Yeah. Chicago, born and raised. Born and raised. Like I said, grew up in a two-parent household. My mother and father, they still married to this day. Been married for 33 years.
Dope.
Yeah, so they raised me. And I left when I was, I think, 2017, 18. I can't remember the exact age. I moved to Florida for a year with my older brother. He was in the Navy at the time.
Mm.
And at this time, you know, when you graduate from high school, most kids, they don't really know what they want to do.
At all. I got one coming up right now.
I had no idea. And I had terrible grades. School was never my thing. Like, it was like, I never put too much effort in it for whatever reason. So when I graduated, I'm like, I'm not sure what I want to do. So my brother, he was like, man, just come out here and live in Florida with me.
Yeah.
You could figure out what you want to do. I took him on his offer, moved to Florida with my brother. I lived there for close to a year.
What part?
Jacksonville.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Jacksonville. And at the time, he was getting me acquainted with the military lifestyle. I was seeing it up close, because I already had, like most of us, we have our own idea of it. I'm like, I'm cool. But seeing it every day, he go to work, come home. Going to deployment maybe for a couple of months. I'm like, this is not too crazy. So that was my first time thinking about it. But he gave me this nugget. He said, if you go, don't do the Navy like I did. Go to the Air Force.
Okay.
Because at the Air Force, they treat you a lot better.
Okay.
He was like, I think you should do that. So I was like, I went back home to Chicago, still working some jobs. And I'm like, you know what? I'm sick of this. I think I'm going to do what he said I should. I went to the Air Force.
Best decision?
Best decision.
How so?
Because one, it taught me, like growing up in Chicago, a lot of people don't know this, Chicago is very segregated.
Okay.
If you grow up in a black area, it's nothing but black people. Hispanic, nothing but Hispanics. Italian, same. Asians, the same. Whites, the same. So growing up like that, my community is all black. I never was really around other races. And as we know, every race is different.
Sure.
It's not a good or a bad thing. It's just everybody different and unique.
And some similarities.
And a lot of similarities too. But me, it was like, I was in a box where I didn't really understand. When I got in the military, I struggled for my first 2 years because I didn't really know how to navigate around other people. Yeah. I'm so used to dealing with my own, my kind. We speak how we speak. Right. You know how it is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But everywhere is not like that. So when I went to the military, I had to adapt quick or I wasn't going to survive. Like, you can't, this ain't Chicago no more. You got to, everything is in an orderly fashion. You got to move it. And it forced me to adapt very quickly, how to learn how to, I feel like at this point, I could be in any kind of environment and I could flourish.
Gotcha.
When I joined the military, definitely wasn't like that. Yeah. All I knew was Chicago. Chicago lingo, Chicago vernacular, the behavior, the mannerisms.
Pops. Y'all have pops, right?
Pops. You know we drink pop. No soda. Yeah, pops. Couple, like, that's all I knew. So it took a couple years to break out of that and get me, like, polished, as I like to say.
How much of a culture shock was it from how you grew up in your house, like the interactions with your dad? My dad was a military guy. He wasn't necessarily a drill sergeant with me, but some of those things kind of bled into mm-hmm. how he ran the house. What do you remember about your father in the home and his character?
I always tell people the biggest thing I probably remember about my father is my dad, he didn't speak much coming up until something happened. Till me and one of my brothers got in trouble. Maybe we wasn't doing good in school. That's when it would be like a problem. Or he would come give us the talk.
Yeah.
But he was chill. He didn't really say too much. He went to work, came home every day, which was a blessing.
Sure.
Something that I took for granted back then, because I'm like, man, well, he need to go somewhere else for a couple months so I could do what I want.
Right.
Well, you know, and dad in the house, it's a little different. So that's what I remember mostly about him and really installing, like, God in me and my brothers, sure. You know, taking us to church. My dad, he was one of those dads where, like, when Christmas would come around, he would get us, we would do the Christmas things and the birthday gifts, but he would take us to like shelters in the church and give to the homeless and stuff like that. So he was one of those type of pops, for real.
Did you appreciate him? And if so, do you recall when you started?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
I tell people all the time, I didn't appreciate my father until I left home and got on my own.
Same.
Probably about 2-3 years in the military, that's when it started to kick in. And now, as each year goes by, the appreciation increases.
Of course.
Now I'm a father.
Of course.
So you know how it is. I'm very appreciative now. So then, like I said, I looked at it from a, like, man, he's always on my back about something. It's always an issue. It's always a problem. But I didn't understand that he was guiding me on a path, because he knew in the surrounding area where I was from, so many of my friends, they didn't have their father. And so many of them to this day, they ended up on the wrong path, whether it's being in jail or being dead. So my dad, you know, being much older and being my father, he had the wisdom. He knew better than me.
Yeah.
So he was guiding me on a certain path that I didn't. As a kid, you don't understand at the time. You want to do, I see all my friends doing whatever they want. When I was in 6th, 7th grade, I had friends that used to be going home at midnight.
Exactly.
And I'm like, man, why I can't? And my dad, like, man, you crazy.
My dad didn't care about how nobody else outside of the house raised their kids. You be in the house.
Facts.
And I was one of the fortunate ones. When I was a teenager, I had the car. So my curfew became everybody's curfew. They could technically stay out later, but if you ride with me,
you gotta come,
hey. I got to be home by X. So that we got to start deducting time off of me getting home to get y'all home.
Yeah.
So many lessons that I chose to learn the hard way, that my dad in his way was trying to teach me. And I say that because he's from that school of more is caught than taught. So observe.
Observing.
Like, he had to observe his father because his father wasn't communicative.
Same with my
he
dad.
Lost his father early. So he was trying to transition with me to be more open, but he didn't really have a blueprint to
the
do
tools.
It. So he was winging it. And he was the kind of, like, he would attempt to give me information, but once I got to a point where I'm bucking on the information, not physically.
Right, right.
That's because I like my teeth. You know what I'm saying? To this day, I respect, I don't even... Yeah, curse around my dad. And mama, I don't
me
curse
neither.
At all.
Me neither.
I don't curse at all. Anything, you don't think I do.
In facts.
But he got to the point where he was like, okay, you're choosing to figure out how to be a man on your own. So he would not force information on me. So the distance just got, and it's not on him. It was me trying to, like, I left the house at 18, went to college, did nothing my first semester. So that whole, you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
I did well in high school. I was graduated with honors and had a decent GPA. And I thought I was prepared for college. I wasn't ready for college. Everything that happened in high school and how I finished suggested, yeah, he learns. He's good in these subjects. He knows how to take tests and all of that. I thought college was a repeat of high school. So I approached it like that. I ain't got to go to class. I know physics. I got an A in physics. I know algebra.
Yeah, you did right.
I got it. But what I didn't realize is that high school was a lot of read and regurgitate. College was like, here's some principles and then apply it to this situation.
That's totally different.
And figure this thing out. You know what I'm saying? So I think I had like a 0.14 GPA into the first semester. And I know my listeners know I tell this story all the time. I tried to play my dad like I was sad about my grades. Because I thought he was going to buck. Because me being 18 was like, it changed in terms of how he would discipline me. Like I grew up getting beat. I stopped getting beat at like 12, but it was also always that healthy fear.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
You just don't play with him. You don't play with his money.
Nothing.
And that's exactly what he said. He's like, you're not wasting my money anymore. And he told me on a Friday when he saw my grades, he said, Monday, when I get up and go to work, you leave my house and don't come back before me unless you got a job. And that was my introduction to the world that I didn't have to be in. I just chose not to do what I was supposed to do in college. So I say that to get to this point of like, what would you say is the most painful lesson that you could have avoided if you had more communication with your pops?
Oh man.
Or just listen to them.
There's so many schooling as far as when my parents always emphasized like doing good in school. Like they wasn't one of those parents that's like, let me see your homework. We gonna go over it. They was the type of parents that trust you. We want you to be responsible. Did you do your homework? If I say yes, they gonna take me for my word. I said yes every time, even when I didn't. And my father used to always tell me, you need to do your work, stay on top of stuff so you go to school, you can do this, you can make good money. I'm like, man, I'm not trying to hear none of this. At a certain age, when you, probably like around 13, 14, I'm more worried about the girls. Exactly. Hanging out. I don't want to hear nothing about no school.
Exactly.
So that is like, I could immediately remember that. I know that would have changed everything if I listened to them and took them more serious. Cause I had the ability to do it.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to do it. And then when I graduated, I'm thinking about going to college. My parents looked me straight in the eye and said, we ain't paying for you to go to college.
Yeah, how?
Right.
We how like, does this, we, make sense?
This don't make sense. Yeah. They was like, you didn't even want to go to high school. Why would you going to waste our money in college? So that's when I was like, damn. I should have been listening from day one, because my older brother went to college for a while. I didn't.
Yeah.
So, but they knew like, nah, that ain't for you. You're not going to waste our money.
This just got real interesting, because how they raised you in high school is how I'm approaching my son. My older two girls got it. The oldest one, she was cool in school. She started trying some stuff towards like 11th and 12th grade. My second oldest is probably the most mature person in the house.
Really?
Me included on some days. She's the type that I'm doing this. Here's my schedule. Here's the path that I'm on. Can you sign this? She's that student. You know what I'm saying? And the teachers are like, why are y'all coming to, y'all are taking up space in these parent-teacher conferences because there's nothing to say about your daughter. Like,
oh, see that kind
of
kid.
Like, leave it to somebody that actually needs
that it. That needs it.
But with my son, I got on this kick of, it has to be for you. Right. Because my parents were homework checkers after my grade suggested I didn't do my homework.
Exactly.
Because there was a reason.
Mm-hmm.
But just like you, they would trust me up.
Yeah.
Until. And like I get on punishment or, you know, when I was in high school, I wouldn't get whippers anymore, but I'd be on punishment for a marking period at a time. And that was 9 weeks where I'm from.
Damn.
So if you played 9 weeks, hopefully you got everything you needed while you was playing, because the next 9 weeks,
you ain't doing nothing.
The next 18 weeks ain't nothing popping. And if you ended on the summer wrong, summer's canceled. What I'm trying to do with my son is get him to get a hold of, like, this has to be for you. Like, I want you to have good grades, but you have to desire to get good grades.
Absolutely.
Because your report card is going to do nothing for me. Like, you have to be grasping the information. You have to learn how to learn. You got to learn how to figure things out. Do you get it? And
right.
He's at a point now where he gets it, but the path to getting it has set him up to limit like some of his school options. Like he got it, but he got it late. And he admits, he's like, I'm not ready to go off to school. So he'll be at a community college, which is fine, because that's the route I ended up taking.
Because it's a better route a lot of times too.
It ended up being better for me because I ended up working and going to school full time, which was the harder thing. The other piece of it is I'm trying to give him all of these lessons. Like, son, it doesn't have to be hard. I chose hard. If you choose hard, it's not going to be for lack of me telling you about how hard it's going to be. So my question to you is, like, how does it, I'm looking at you like, okay, you're down mm-hmm. the path of this approach. I don't know how it's going to turn out with my son. It's a dice roll. And I mean, he's very intelligent. And when he speaks, I know he gets it. But
right.
just the discipline, the habits. This morning, he ended up walking to school again.
Missed the bus.
No, missed me. Like, he goes to school late. He's a senior year. Doesn't have to be school until 9.
Oh, man, they got a cake.
9 o'clock, I'm knocking on his door. And he wakes up. And then I had an appointment. So I'm like, son, the other piece of it is, I'm building my day around you because I'm dropping off and picking up with the kids.
Right.
So if you're late, now you got to be considerate about what that may do to my day.
Right.
So he comes downstairs and I'm thinking, he was really about to push an appointment. I had a podcast this morning mm-hmm. at 9:30. He comes downstairs at 9:20. I'm like, man, I got to push my thing back. Got to rearrange stuff for you. He was like, nah, I'll walk. Because he had to do it before. But it's the...
How far did I walk?
A mile and a half.
That's a good walk.
Yeah. It's like,
it ain't bad.
Get your lungs together.
Right.
Get your lungs together mm-hmm. and all of that. But it's the... I'm trying to design the consequences to be meaningful and fitting for what's happening, but I just really want him to get it. So with that approach with you, where did it click? Because clearly you present it now. We'll get into what your presentation actually means. Yeah. But
that's so interesting. Because another thing I want to pinpoint with something you said, it was different back then. If he don't get it now, so the consequences I think are bigger.
Yeah.
The cost of living now. Is
you can't do what I did.
You can't do that no more.
My first rent was $315, utilities included.
$315.
Me and my partner. My mom owned the house, but she charged.
That's crazy.
Like $550 for the rent, and then utilities we had to put in another whatever.
You can't do that now.
Can't.
You will be living with your folks forever. You will never.
Electricity in Texas.
Exactly. Literally, that's electricity.
Three times that.
Yes. Yeah. So, man, for me personally, when it clicked for me. Is when I moved out of Chicago that first time and I went to Florida. Mm-hmm. That was like half the click that I'm like, oh man, this life is much bigger than Chicago. Maybe I can do some amazing things in life. Then the real click happened. I tell this story all the time when I was in the military. I was about 3 years in. I got tasked with a deployment to Doha.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Worst places to go.
There's a lot of worst places to go, but I didn't want to go at all. I'm like, because I know how deployments is. You know how I go. I'm going to be working 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. Seven, eight months. Yeah. I'm in 110, 120 degree weather. I'm like, yo, I'm cool. But you know, it's the military. You ain't got no say so. No. When they tell you, you're going.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right. And then before I went, my supervisor at the time, he advised me to go create a will. Mm. He's like, cause it's the military. And when he said it, it's so crazy. Cause my first couple years in the military, I was honestly just BSing. But when he told me to make a will, it hit me at that moment, like, oh, I am in the military.
I might not.
Yo, that whole time, that first 2 years, I never had that thought process. But when he told me that, I looked at him. I'm like, what you mean, create a will? And he was like, he didn't even respond. He just looked at me like, I read his face. His face was saying, do you not know you in the military? And then he didn't even have to say it. I was like, oh. So I took him on his word. I went. And when I went to make the will, it was a room with like 30 people. I had to be the youngest person in there. Everybody was like 30s. Yeah. 35, and at this time I'm 23, so I'm making a will, and at this time I'm 22, so I'm 22, and it took me like 60 seconds to write my will, bro. Mm. And if you know anything about wills, if it take you that amount of time, that means you ain't got nothing.
Your assets is
it's nothing.
Ain't asset.
I remember literally I wrote my Xbox. I had like 10 pair of Jordans. I'm like, how much these Jordans worth? I had a watch that my girl bought me. And I probably had like $1,000 in my savings because I was just spending all my money having a ball.
Yeah.
So that's when it hit me. Mm. And I was like, dang. So if I was to go on this deployment and I was to die, it was just like, even though I ain't got no kids or nothing, it would just be like I'm vanished. It was like my life, I ain't gonna say admit nothing.
Yeah.
But it's like I didn't accomplish nothing. That's how I looked at it.
I think that's a critical point for every man in life. And I really didn't think about it until you just said that. When they realize that, like, mortality.
Yeah, yep.
And it doesn't have to be associated with the street or doing anything extremely, well, I shouldn't say extremely risky because going overseas into a war zone.
That's risky.
That's risky. Mm-hmm. That's Chi-Town 2.0.
Facts.
Right.
Facts.
But I remember that hitting me when I went to, it wasn't even the fact that I had a family that did it, but I went to Iraq for a year right after my son was, well, he was about to turn one. My wife got, she was in the Air Force. She did 8 years and we made a decision for her to get out. And foolishly, if you learn nothing else from me, foolishly, when she got out of the military, I came home and said, I'm an entrepreneur too.
Oh, man.
It's no income. But we're going to make it work because I was a marketing major.
Yeah.
I got A's in marketing and I'm going to do something. I had no plan. So that.
Yeah, confidence though.
That, in hindsight, not really.
He said, hindsight, not really.
I just had an excuse. I just had an excuse that I was going to stop working. So, you know, that floundered for several months. And then I ended up getting the opportunity to go overseas. Well, I needed the opportunity to go overseas with a contractor because. The dream that was sold is, you know, it's six figures and it's tax free.
Yep.
It's the first X amount when I went, I think it was up to like 92,000 is tax deferred, tax free if you meet certain standards.
Right.
Like if you stay out of the country so many days or you got a bona fide residence, that kind of it's tests that go with it. But the reality was I went over there and worked 7/12s.
Yep.
So I worked 2 weeks every week, 2 weeks plus every week for this 100,000. And when you really do the math, you know, the hourly rate won't nothing.
It don't add up.
Sexy.
Yeah.
But it was the opportunity to get the money and get ahead. But when I got over there, it changed me. Because, like, I think every person, especially every man, every black man needs to understand what freedom isn't. Like being in a place where you're not free. And I'm not saying jail.
Right.
But when you land in Iraq or you land in Afghanistan, believe you free if you want to, just because you're from the U.S.
It don't work like that.
Tread lightly.
Yeah, don't
so when I got like over there and realized that I really don't have no, ain't nobody I can call. It like it's everything is a process. I could really not go home, and it made me more like numb.
So it does.
I was talking to my family, which is not I don't recommend. I was talking to my family less because it was hard to talk to them.
Talk, yeah.
And they asked me how's my day, and it's traces. Going on, it's a bunker call. You can't say that.
Mm-mm.
I can say that to the person beside me that's there because they live that life.
It.
So if I'm saying, oh, it's bunker call, nah,
they panic.
They freaking out. So I think every man needs to get to that point where they realize like how fragile
life
really is, man.
So I agree.
You did the military how long?
I did 6.5. I joined in 2013. Yeah. I got out. 2019. So y'all did 6.
Okay.
Yep.
Then what was the next phase?
Like? Entrepreneurship.
Okay.
Yep. So
you had a plan.
Yeah, I had a plan. I had a plan.
Pew, your shots fired.
And the plan started from my deployment. And I went on my deployment in 2017. So during my deployment is when I started structuring my plan. And that was my start. I started thinking about life after the military. Because I always knew when I joined, I didn't want to do 20. Nothing. Yeah. And for those that's listening, you ain't nothing wrong with doing 20 because some people hear this and they'll jump out the window. And ain't nothing wrong with doing 20. If you enjoy it, you like it, you got you working, ain't nothing wrong with that. But me personally, I knew I don't want to do 20. So on my deployment, this is when I started structuring my plan. And this is when I started learning about investing and real estate and stocks and crypto, all these things. I was amazed and it consumed me. Outside of work, that's all I did was just study, read. I'm like, whoa, this is mind blowing.
What triggered that focus though?
That writing that wheel.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, okay. Yeah. That putting my mortality in question, like, oh man, I'm not going to live forever.
It's finite.
Yeah. It's like, you know, when you're young, most people that's 22, 23, you don't think like that. But when you're in a situation where you forced to think like that, you do, like you said, it makes you look at things differently. So I'm like, whoa, I don't have forever. And it's better for me if I start younger. That's why I don't got any kids.
Ugh.
I said, it's better if I start now because I know if I wait and I have a kid and the family is going to be harder because my bills is practically nothing at this time.
Yeah.
And I had this enough sense to know, well, I ain't really got no bills and I am making some money. I need to do something with this money.
That's a message right there, bro. Like that's a word and it may sound so reasonable to you,
mm-hmm.
but I remember when I thought I started making money. When I graduated from college, I took the long. It took me 7 years. I mean,
I was going
part time, and then I finished up doing full time. But I was working the whole time, and my bills weren't nothing. Right? But the fallacy in my approach was outside of not having a plan and not thinking long term, every time I got a raise, my lifestyle
raised.
So I never saw it. I never really got the benefit of it other than having more stuff in the same house that I hadn't bought yet. So it was, I had a lot of regrets, because when I look back on opportunities that I had with that freedom, like before you have, like you said, the family, or before you had bills, the pressure of a family is 10x bills. Bills is linear. Like yeah. It comes in, you pay the family. There's a dynamic you can't control because you don't know how to parent. Maybe you don't know how to be
right. And you're learning everything.
And everybody's depending on you.
Yep.
Looking at you to keep everything together.
Yep.
So that pressure sometimes can make you less risky or can make you foolish. So figuring out an opportunity, whether you plan to get married or not, thinking about your future before it's your future. Make a whole lot of sense.
You telling the truth, because now when you say that, it made me think that's exactly how I got into cryptocurrency. Because I remember telling my friends, I'm like, look, I ain't got no kids. I ain't married yet. This is my opportunity. If I lose it, it's just going to fall on me.
Yeah.
So I'm like, but when I understood when I have children that like now I'm way less risky than I was 5, 6. I'm nowhere near as risky. Like, if I hear some stuff people do, I'm like, good for you, because I ain't doing it. Not no more. I got people that's literally depending on me. My whole mentality, not even just money, as far as where I go, the things I do is different.
Everything is a risk.
Everything is like, they be shooting over there, don't they? Nah, I got a daughter.
But it's live, though.
It's like, I'm cool.
Yeah, somebody not live.
It ain't. Yeah. It's not like, if I go on vacation, I remember... I was in Mexico when I was it parasailing, paragliding? Yeah. When you're in a boat up in the air. Uh-huh. Whole time I'm thinking about, man, why am I doing this? What if this don't end right? Who gonna raise my child?
Right.
That's all I think about now. So that's why I say I live such a simple life, because a lot of my mindset is thinking, I have to protect myself.
Sure.
Because if something goes wrong, who gonna take care of my wife? Who gonna take care of my daughter?
Yeah.
It's on me. So I have to be I'm moving like, how can I put it? I'm just moving very, very calculated. And just, as you know, it's nothing. You can't be perfect.
Yeah.
Stuff can happen anywhere.
For sure.
But
look at the last 48 hours.
Exactly. 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 But at least I'm not going to willingly put myself in a position that I know is dangerous. I'm not going to do that just because everything.
Yeah.
So that stuff does change your life, man. When I remember getting into Bitcoin, it was only $3,800.
Bro, when I heard Bitcoin, it probably was less than $200. It was some white boys in Iraq. And I don't say that flippantly. I'm saying they were talking openly
about
Bitcoin. They weren't hiding it, because I would, because sometimes stuff is kept from us. But I had no excuse.
Facts.
I was just like, questioning in my mind.
Like, is this legit?
How does that work? And God darn.
$200? Oh my God.
Somebody can fact check. This was, I came home in 2009.
Bitcoin was very, I found out 2017.
I could have tricked off a whole check and dealt with the conversation with my wife. Like, well, I mean, this 7,000, I'm trying. We ain't gonna go broke, but.
That's what I did.
What would the upside be?
That's what I did. I said, I'm going to try.
Yeah.
And luckily, my wife was my girl at the time.
Mm.
When I came back and I'm like, this is the plan, she was just like, okay, let's see. And she was still, we both really young. She's just like, all right, you done all this research. I don't really know about it, but you've been going overseas, reading and all this.
Yeah.
Let's see what happens.
Yeah. How'd y'all meet?
Military.
Okay. Oh, so that makes sense. She understood the life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's such a big thing, to have a spouse that trusts you.
Yeah. It's a huge thing.
And the caveat is you also presented a plan. So I'm not suggesting.
Right.
Man, if your wife ain't listening or your girl ain't listening, should she be listening to you? It's not like you created a relationship. She saw that in you where you weren't just wilding.
No.
And you had some structure to your thought.
Yeah, I knew, with any investment, there is no 100% guarantee.
Yeah.
You could take a L, especially when it's something when you're talking about crypto. Yeah. It could have, that's so volatile, especially then, like it could have 100% been an L, but it was the risk I was willing to take. And like you said, because I had the plan, I had the, like, we're going to do this. I already knew when I came home, I'm like, I'm about to get into crypto, I'm going to get into stocks, then I'm going to start buying real estate. I just knew, because I'm like, I've been doing all this research. and I'm gonna keep learning myself. Now I'm not gonna have the mentality that, oh, I know it all now. Like, no, I still don't know. I'm still gonna learn. And while I'm learning, I'm gonna try, I'm gonna experiment, I'm gonna fail. I might fail a lot of times, but I know how in business and life, all you need is a few wins.
Yeah.
And the wins could just erase those failures you had if they big enough.
You still an entrepreneur to this day?
Yep. Full time.
What more informs the other? Hear me out. Your experience as an entrepreneur, does that make you a better father and a husband? Or your experience as a father and a husband make you a better entrepreneur? Because they're so related.
They're so related. That's a great question. How can I answer that? Do my experience as a father and husband help me as an entrepreneur or vice versa? If I had to pick one, I would say being a father and a husband is making me a better entrepreneur just because of the responsibility. The value on that is more important than business.
Sure.
Which is why so many businesses, when they hiring CEOs, execs, managers, they look for people that are fathers and husbands or wives and mothers because they know you have that responsibility.
Yeah.
They know you used to compromising if you have to. You're not too prideful. You like, everything got to be my way at all times. When you're in a relationship, you a parent, that's just not how it works. Sometimes you got to be like, you know, even though I know I may be right in this situation, I'm going to let it go this way just so you can see how I play it out. So you may learn this on your own.
Yeah.
So I think that, like I said, which is why so many companies, brands, you look at politics, people trust people that have some kind of responsibility. Yeah. And I think as a man, I think you need that to really mature. I think the reason why we have so many immature men in America today is because most men don't have a lot of responsibility.
Or accountability.
Most men, as we know, are single.
Yeah.
And I think the average man doesn't have a child. And if you, and not to say there's something wrong with that, but I feel like to achieve great things, but to really tap into that accountability and responsibility at max,
yeah.
I think you need one of those two things.
How did you not go crazy, right? Because you were young, you didn't have responsibilities, you figured the money thing out. Clearly you had a girlfriend, so I'm not discounting that.
Right.
Like that, there's a pull that comes with that. Where other things in life are available to you. I'm not saying they were attractive to you, but how did you stay on the path to, or did you? Dip your toe a little bit?
So when I lived in, so before I moved to Dallas, I lived in California. And in California, it was easy for me to stay on the straight and path because I was in the area. I didn't live in like LA or nothing. I lived in Northern California in a city called Roseville.
Okay.
It's like 30 minutes outside of Sacramento. And it's a very
fat area.
No, it's about an hour and a half from Vallejo. But I went to school in the Bay in San Francisco. But where I lived, it was a very family oriented. It's not much to do. It's not no clubs you could really go to and kick it at. So you have no choice but to be locked in. But when I came to Dallas is a 180.
Yeah.
So I got off track for about 2 years because this is my first time with me being an adult with now I got money.
I got options.
I got notoriety now. And this is my first time being in the city, having those things where stuff is just open to me. And not only that, I live in the middle of the city. I lived in Victory Park right next to the Mavericks Arena.
I'm familiar.
So every night is up. It's parties, clubs, drinking, going out, having a ball every night.
Yeah.
And it was about a year and a half, maybe 2 year period, bro. I probably was outside 4 days, 5 days a week.
Yeah. Was any regrets or was it worth it? And I say, was it worth it? Like to the whole clearing your system of.
Yeah. Getting that out your system.
Like, do I really need this? Do I really like this? Or it's like, man, I would trade it back in for the $80,000 that I blew.
I would. That's a wonderful question, but it's hard to answer because they both like, it's so much money I wasted that, man, I would love to have it back. But if I had it, like, it is a thing and value of getting certain things out your system as a man, I believe.
Yeah.
I could have done everything right. And still lives like not doing anything. But then who knows, at this point in my life right now, I could have had that itch. I want to be outside. Now, like doing all those things, I have no itch. Yeah. People always ask me like, you could just chill at home on the weekends, not doing, yes, not doing nothing.
I can see you on the golf course.
Yeah.
Very simple.
I go to the golf course, or I'm at home, I'm chilling. I don't need to go to no club. I don't need to go drinking. I don't need to do any of that because I got it out of my system. And I never really was that type of person.
Yeah.
I just did it here because I was experiencing. It was available. I was right there in the city in the mix. So it was just so easy. And then when you live in a building like that, you're always getting invited. Getting invited to a dinner, getting invited to the birthday party, getting invited to, oh, we got a section at this club tonight. You don't even got to pay. Just pull up. Getting invited to a sporting event. It's every day or something. So now it's like, come on, I'm having my fun now.
Yeah.
But I wish I could take all that money back. But at the same time, I think doing all those things and taking losses and experiencing a lot of stuff is what helps me be at peace right now with not having to do all that stuff.
Yeah. How important is environment to you at this stage?
Environment is everything. Environment is, if I had to rank it on important skills, definitely would be top five. And it's the reason why I moved out to that rural town. With me not having a daughter, I knew I only want to have my daughter in a specific type of environment.
Sure.
I don't want her to be around a bunch of crazy stuff, crazy situations and stuff like that, maybe similar to how I came up. So environment, not only for that, me as a family man, but me as a business, being around people where that can pique my interest and put me on the things and vice versa.
Yeah.
We have good, I know they own similar type of things, whether it may be with their family, whether it be with their business, if they're in corporate. Like, so all those things, I really believe in iron sharpens iron.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be in an environment where everybody is like just living recklessly and lawlessly.
Loose.
Yeah, living loose.
Living loose.
Yeah, I'm cool on that.
Yeah, I'm glad I came to this
area, yeah,
married and established.
This, great.
This area could turn you all the way out if you wanted to.
All the way.
It's not even, I'm not even saying it in a bad or a negative way, but everything you want.
You got it.
Is available.
It's available.
It's available.
Mm-hmm.
What, he says, well, you, I don't know if you said it on here, but your daughter is too. We had a conversation. What scares you about fatherhood right now?
Man, that's a great question. That's another great question. You got some heavy hitters, man. I would say influences, because there's no when the Pandora's box is open, you can't close it. When the toothpaste is out, when it's out, you can't put it back in.
Yeah, yeah.
And with a kid, their mind is so precious and so innocent. And I know I can't protect her from everything, but I just gotta do the best that I can that protect her from how can I say it, making her mind be exposed to things that no child should be exposed to. And I hear stories about things all the time, and I'm like, yo, I gotta protect my kid from that. And like I said, you can't be, ain't no parent perfect. We all make mistakes, but that's probably the main thing, because she's two.
Yeah.
But I also, I'm one of those fathers that I'm always thinking about the future. I'm always talking about one day my daughter, she's gonna be somebody's wife, hopefully. She's gonna be somebody's mother, God willing.
Yeah.
It's like,
even
it's
just somebody's person of interest.
Person of interest, period.
Yeah.
Like, so it's gonna be at a point where somebody gonna look at my daughter, find her attractive, and be like, I want to be with her. I like her.
Yeah.
All those things as a father is concerning to me when I see her, and that's just my little baby.
Yeah.
She's just so innocent and perfect in my eyes. So just thinking about there's gonna be some little perverted boy one day looking at her like, it's like, it's concerning.
Yeah.
But it's like, I just gotta do my best to raise her properly, be a great example for her.
Yeah.
Because the time is gonna come. She's gonna get of age. Oh. She's gonna have interest in men.
Blink twice, it's gonna be there.
You scared me. I know, and I know it happened fast.
Yeah, so since you were here, we were talking about, was your daughter born? She may have just been born here a couple years ago, clearly, but since then, now I have a granddaughter that's 8 months.
You got a granddaughter now?
Well, she's not here right now. Chance she might come in.
Okay.
But my oldest lived life and life.
What?
Life rewarded her with her activities.
Grandpa.
I love it, but it's the duality of being a parent and a grandparent, and they all in the same house. So I got 21, 19, 17, 11, and 10 today. So even without the grandchild, it's various types of parenting I have to do because my wife kept getting pregnant and I'm leaving that in. I don't know. She just kept getting pregnant.
I'm leaving that in.
It's something to see your child raising a child, and you know your child still has some childish things in them.
In them.
And now I got to I got to manage, I got to relearn how to parent her as an adult. But I understand that the risk of her not getting it now impacts our next generation.
Yeah.
So that's crazy. All of that to say, you know, and I know 8 months, I'm not thinking about somebody being interested in her, but all of it matters now until somebody's interested in her.
Yep. Because
that's her lens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you demonstrate as what's acceptable. I've had to clean up a whole lot of things. I've had to reorganize, reprioritize things in my life as a...
Hear that? That's the sound of the engines that make America hum. The sound of our state's surging manufacturing industry. Our Senator John Fetterman stood strong for workers. He voted to protect Pennsylvania jobs, stop the needless waste of American energy, and hold big polluters accountable. Thank you, Senator Fetterman, for fighting for us. Paid for by Environmental Defense Fund.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tomtandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
As a grown man, 38, 40, I'm 45 now, be 46 this year. And I got to thinking, like, 3 daughters, 2 sons. Would I really want my daughters to meet a me?
I think about that all the time.
Say more, because that's where we're going.
I think about that all the time. Like, anytime, like, and us as men, we got to be honest with ourselves.
That's what this platform is.
We got to be honest with ourselves, because a lot of men, they'll just say, like, yeah, but they, deep down in their heart, they don't really believe that.
But because they're talking about their representation that they give to their
that
daughter.
They give to their daughter. Yeah. No, we talking about the man that your girl, that your wife deals with. Would you want your daughter to be with that person?
And it, for me, it's a lot of stage. We just made 20 years a couple weeks ago. So it's a lot of stages.
It's a lot of stages.
Of different me, different her.
Yeah.
Us, you know, on the same page, not on the same page.
Yeah.
And I started thinking about, like, I think the first episode this year with me and my co-host, we were talking about 2025 goals, and it's something that we do every year. Mm-hmm. It's kind of an easy, it's like low hanging fruit.
Right.
But the last thing that came to my mind was, I was like, man, I don't know if my children have enough information based on what they see of me and my wife to know what marriage is really about, or to know. And that's just being
no,
honest.
That's real. That's deep.
And it's not even have to be anything salacious or anybody wilding, but 20 years is a long time, and 5 kids is a lot of kids that demand a whole lot of time of that 20 years. So you can look up and have the best intentions, and you focus on the kids, she focus on the kids, you're changing, she's changing. If you never look up to understand what those changes are, 5 years down the road,
people don't even make it to 5.
You might be meeting a roommate in your house because you haven't been consistent with the energy or making sure that, like, kids get the rap of, my kids need me, so I got to be there, if I got to do it for my kids. But if that connection with the parents ain't right, they see and feel all of that. And it forms and influences now what they look for and what's acceptable to them. So I started thinking, I'm like, man, I'm like outside in, people, you know, you post 20 years, oh yeah, y'all goals.
No, you don't know. You have no idea.
Not goals.
You
don't. I don't know of a couple that's goals. I mean, my parents, they'll be married.
But you know all the stuff. You know what all the stuff they've been through.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Same here. Correct. I know all the stuff my parents been through.
And that's the thing. Like the lens that I had of my parents as a child.
It's completely different as a
different
adult.
Now because they're different. They right. have more information.
And that doesn't mean that you look at them any less or respect them less. It's just that you're looking at from a mature adult lens. You're right.
Oh.
That's what it is.
Oh. So maybe what I interpreted as this was really that. And that's what I'm saying. Like my kids are, and when you have I can't say I have any science on this or data, but the data in my house says kids try to they always try to be as old as their older siblings.
Mm-hmm.
They want the same privileges. They want to run in that same, they want to have the same conversations. So having a set of three that are closely bunched together, then having the space and having a set of two, those younger two grew up real fast. Because they was hanging with their big sisters, big brother, and that's the relationship. And then even as parents, like sometimes it's guilty of like, yo, go hang with y'all. Y'all a tribe, especially when we went overseas.
Yeah, y'all can.
It was kind of like we all we got. So they hung together and they got tight. But it was like, I really wonder, have they seen enough to know what they really want out of marriage? I know they can duplicate what they
said. Right.
Because that was the fallacy.
Do they understand it?
That was the fallacy in my marriage. I came to my marriage trying to be my dad, what my dad was to my mom. My mom is not my wife. I'm coming in like I saw my dad do this.
This is what you know.
It has to work.
It has to work. That ain't how. No.
No, sir.
You bringing up some really deep stuff because I'm thinking about it on a grand scheme when you talk about not only just your kids but this generation period because they consume social media is raising a lot of these kids and when you see the conversation about relationships and marriage on social media, it's really a fairy tale. And then if it's not a fairy tale, they telling everybody to leave. Yeah. Like we always talk about how women want a finished product when it comes to a man, but we don't really discuss how men are similar. We want finished products when it comes to women too.
Yeah.
But we don't really say that.
that's what gets dicey.
Yeah.
You ask
a lot of dudes like why they left this girl and why they not with this girl, it'll be a lot of times it'd be like, oh, she ain't do this how I liked it. Or it was that. It was like, or she couldn't cook. It's like, that's important, but ain't nobody know finished product.
Did you make it important in the relationship? Did she know if she had a chance coming into it?
Exactly. Is she willing to learn how to cook?
I can't cook. It ain't in me. This is never going to work.
Is that the industry she bought or is she willing to learn?
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of times dudes, they just be like, man, she can't do that. She ain't on this. It ain't going to work. It's like, bro, she not who she is at 25. If y'all get together, it's going to be a completely different person at 30. Another different person at 35. A whole nother person at 45. Gotcha. So you got to give more people more grace. But like we saying, I think a lot of people in these times with social media, they have such a flawed, skewed view of relationships and a messed up part about it. The worst part is you look in the Black community specifically, the stats say around 70% of us is raised in single parent households, specifically being raised by the mom. Mm-hmm. So if you look at a majority of us being raised by a mom, then we consuming all this content on social media. I hate to say it, but a lot of us ain't going to have the future I'm talking about. I can't imagine what the marriage rate going to be 30 years from now.
Because love blinds logic.
It's blind.
As logic as men typically are, love or the idea of having access to a woman clouds all of that. Clouds every last bit of it.
What do you mean? Break that down.
So if you are pursuing someone that has never had a reference to a healthy home,
a healthy marriage,
a healthy relationship, never saw it. Dad was never in the home. And this is not a knock, but we talk with the stats. The stats are the stats.
Mm-hmm.
And you think somehow you are the answer. Or you don't think you're the answer. You just don't care about that question.
Right. Most people.
Because you're happy in the moment.
Right.
You're happy in the moment.
Right.
And I don't care what nobody say. If you live with somebody 17 years and y'all get married on the 18th year, something changes after that ceremony.
Yes.
I've been living with I don't know if it's a psychological thing, but something like when my wife walked down the aisle, and let's just be clear, there was no new access I was going to have.
Right.
We kind of,
you know, right.
We was raised. there was no new access, but something was like, everything is changing right now. And I ain't gonna say that's why I was crying.
More serious.
I ain't gonna say that was why I was crying, but it can be, you can play it up until it's real. The moment it becomes real, I dare somebody to prove me wrong. And it could happen, because like I said, I ain't talked to everybody.
Everybody does.
But it's something about it, man. We think that the way that we enjoy it now is all that matters.
Oh.
And the thing about the 25, 30, 45, and 50 changes, we understand that we want to change.
Right.
We're going to be different. But we completely discount
that person.
Yeah. We want them to stay what we fell in love with. Exactly. And we're changing. And they just going to acquiesce to whoever new person we are. Something I said before, it's like every version of you and your spouse have to accept every version every time for it to continue working. And sometimes it doesn't work because I'm on update 18.0 and she on 19.3.
Exactly.
And I ain't mean the mark. But we don't want to talk about
that. We don't talk about that.
We want to talk about the highlight reel.
Because we want it to be a fairy tale. We want to believe like it needs to be this. We've been sold this romantic fairy tale, this wrong, and you know, all that stuff comes from wrong for real. You talk about
Cupid.
You talk about the Cupid and all that. That's I think most people don't even understand that marriages and unions wasn't even always even like that. Like, not to say that that's not an important part or it should be, but your idea of a relationship shouldn't be, I need all this fairy tale, romantic type of thing. And if that doesn't happen, I'm out of here.
I'm scared for my son.
No, I'm
scared for my daughters too, but my son, he's not young me, and I'm glad. Like, this is not disparaging. Like, he's not as curious as I was to go out and figure things out through heartbreak.
Mm,
you know what I'm saying?
That's like important.
I was told God said no to sex, so don't do it. That's the extent of the conversation. So what I'm doing, I'm going to figure out, get as much data as I can on this thing, because I don't know why you said that, right? And it was some lessons I learned. It's great to pass them on to my son, but I would be terrified. I'd be terrified to get in the dating pool at 45, my big age today. I think everybody, like Charles, I think everybody playing.
Everybody playing.
Setting you up, everybody lining you up. It's crazy.
It's wicked out here.
Yeah.
It's wicked. And to be honest, I don't see it getting better, especially with the next generation, because like I said, you look at the stats, the majority of us, we don't see it. We don't have that example.
Yeah.
Like, the reason I'm fond of it is because I had the example through my parents. And they raised me talking about the importance of it. And more importantly, just being an example. It wasn't always perfect. You know, they clashed and stuff, but they still worked it out. Like, I'm the type of person, like, I don't even believe in divorce. If you say death do us part, that's what it is. We're going to find a way to work it out. We're going to, whatever we need to do, we're going to do that. But that's not a common, a popular thing in society that we hear, if it ain't working, you need to leave his ass, or you need to leave her.
You will find a reason if you're looking for it.
You always gonna find a reason if
your intent is to leave. The reason will pop up every 30 minutes.
Every single time.
You'll be convinced. That's interesting. You say you don't believe in you don't believe in divorce. That's not in contrast to what I'm about to say. But it's something me and my wife were podcasting at one time. We had these kind of conversations. Sometimes it was conversations we've never had before. So you can imagine how that.
That's interesting. Yeah, like, oh, you're like, oh, I didn't know that.
This session was for us. We ain't putting this up. But it was the notion that divorce is not an option. And I think that's a misnomer, because if you believe that, you believe nothing will come up that will sway you. If you, like, that's like saying death will never come, because I don't believe in death.
Right.
No, divorce is an option. You gotta work away from that,
away from it,
to where it's less desirable. But I think some people have this illogical belief that it won't happen. It can never happen if we don't manage, even if we don't try to manage away from it, yeah, it can never happen.
No, it could definitely happen, yeah, especially if you allow it. Now, there are some circumstances. When I say I don't believe in it, I'm saying that I don't. If there's a situation that y'all can get through it. Y'all should do whatever y'all can, yeah, to get through it. Now, there's some things that you know you can't come back from.
Yeah, abuse is
one. Abuse is one. Now, I'm not saying if you getting your ass whooped, yeah, that you need. That ain't what I'm saying. That's some stuff that you just can't come back from.
True.
But there's a lot of issues that we see today in the modern marriage are fixable.
Yeah.
I got plenty of people that I know personally that I'm close with that got divorced. When I had these conversations with them, it was never like, oh, wow. Like, it was it was just like, man, I see y'all really having problems, but y'all don't think y'all can't never get through that.
Me and my partner had a real honest conversation one time, and when I was thinking about when I thought we were headed for divorce, and I reached out to him because he had just done it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought his life was cooler. Again, this is 15.
Right.
15 years ago. And I thought his life seemed so much cooler. And he was like, John, you ain't built like that. Like, that's, what you got is real. I ain't even worked for mine.
Dang.
I didn't do everything. I was like, for real? He's like, nah. He's like, and that's the worst part is I gotta live with that, knowing that I took an excuse as the out. I didn't do the work. Like, I didn't give her the grace that she gave me. I was just waiting for something to pop. I'm out. And then looking at how life had to be managed, you know, two households and kids and all of that. He's healed later.
Right.
But I was like, man, there was so much value in that conversation for me that I thought he was going to welcome me to the club.
Like, come on.
Like, shoot, man.
What they say, misery love company?
Loves it.
Right.
Roommates, the best of roommates. But I think it's important to have, you know.
Yeah, people like that.
People like that, even if you don't, if you're not trying to pattern their actions, that can be honest with you about where they fail.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
No, that's real.
Because I had some other associates that swear by their divorce. I'm like, I see you're not happy.
Yeah.
You basically just didn't get some stuff out and y'all not able to work through that.
Work through it.
You think it's still more attractive to get the stuff out than be committed. So.
And I think, because there's this misconception, in my opinion, I don't know if you ever seen this. A lot of people today, they say men ain't getting married. Men don't want to get married. Or these men today, they don't. And I honestly don't believe. I think that men are just more afraid of divorce,
yeah,
than anything.
Bro.
I think men, it's the fear. I know several men personally that got divorced and lost everything. I'm talking about no furniture in the house, no food in the refrigerator, no money in the bank account,
yeah,
nothing. And your family gone.
I had a guest on probably a month ago by the time this airs, Corey Hughes. And I posted a clip. I posted it everywhere, but TikTok ate it up. And he was talking about how divorce hurt him. And I pushed him. I was like, what do you mean? What is the hurt of divorce? He said, the hurt is, and he started listing these things. Well, when I tell you 700 comments.
I know it.
That's why I'll never do it again. I'm still hurt. Yeah. I'm still trying to rebuild. I don't think I'll ever do it again. And then you have the people that have never been married chiming in and saying, this is why. So I think there's a big disconnect of information between generations.
It is.
Because I know what me and my pops missed with him being in the house, just not having solid communication, let alone not having access to your father or to a father figure on a regular basis and getting solid information. So I think they're valid in their feelings because the information that they have reflects that.
And today, like we mentioned, a lot of people have the mentality that I can leave for any reason. So you don't know. You get married and your girl might wake up one day and just be like, you know what? I'm no longer fiddling this. But not only am I going to leave, I'm going to take everything with me. And you're going to have to pay me for. So I think, but with that being said, though, let me ask you this, because this is a question I've spoke to some people about this. Do you think getting married, going to a courthouse, getting legally married, you know, got the government involved and all that. Do you think that's the only way to get married? Do you, would you honor a marriage that didn't do that?
Would I honor a marriage? That's an interesting question, because I'm like, I'm thinking like, what business is it of mine? That's between them.
Right.
For me, that's between them and God.
That's how like, I look at
if
it.
If they've concocted some arrangement or agreement that they feel comfortable with, I don't necessarily have to agree with it to celebrate them.
Right.
Like, just like certain lifestyles, I don't agree with it, but I think you have the right to that lifestyle.
No, I agree.
It's just not for me.
I agree. And I'm somebody that got legally married. But when I talk to people and I have this conversation, I'm like, because a lot of men are so scared. I'm like, you know, that is an option if you don't want to do the paper thing. Like, but there's,
then it's common law. Depends on what state you're in.
That too. Yeah. That's kind of, you living together. I think in California, it's like 10 years or something. You live with somebody 10 years. You're common law married. Yeah. So it's an interesting dynamic, because I do understand why a lot of men are so afraid. Because you can, the L more than likely is going to be on the man. Not to say the women are going to be hurt, but you look at most stories with homes like this, if it happens, who get the home?
Yeah, but some men are delusional, because they don't have anything to take.
No, they don't. A lot.
I ain't gonna never get it. Well, you got to get it first.
You got to get it.
Be able to take it.
And let me ask you another question. Do you think a man should have all those things before he get married?
There are times when I wish that I did, but then there's the butterfly effect that you have to consider. The thing that you change changes all the things.
So I believe in that too.
I wouldn't have my wife. I wouldn't have my children. I wouldn't have this life.
And if you waited,
I wouldn't risk it. I will gladly give information about where I could have done things smarter for it than like my sons and my daughters. Like, hey, don't, because we experience this, it doesn't make it a model for you, but it gives us information to pass on to you. So you don't have to do it. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to be celebrating traumas. Like,
no.
Me and my son high five because we both got divorced after. So, like, that ain't it. I don't want to be in that club like that. I want to give them all of the information that I wish that I had or wish that I had listened to. Now, what they do with it is on them.
No, I agree.
I would, in La La Land, I bought a house before we got married. Selling that house made sense at the time because our family was expanding. So when I got married, it was a blended family. It was my wife already had my oldest.
Okay.
We had been together before. So I'd say that's why it worked, because I was never interested in women with children. But me and my wife actually had history, and we went our ways and they came back. So right after that, Imani, child number two, daughter number two was coming, and we were in a one bedroom, like two bedroom, it might've been 1500 square feet, like an old house. It was the old family house that had been passed down. And I'd actually like bought it from my mom at a ridiculous, like a transfer rate, put some money in their pockets, but gave me a start. And when the second child was coming, I was like, man, we need to go. Cause the house didn't have it. It was like, either we need to pull some money out of this house and upgrade it. But I was of the mindset that we were going to upgrade ourselves out of this neighborhood. We would have the dopest house in a very old neighborhood that would never actually recover. Unless we were just planning to live there forever, it would have made sense. But we went and bought another house. If I was more financially responsible as a leader, we wouldn't have done it. Mm. Or let me take it back. The house that we sold, we would have rented instead of dumping all the money into another house. Because we dumped all the money into another house. A couple years after that, we relocated. What we didn't understand was our actual financial picture before we got in the process. We thought that we're going to be able to use the VA loan, significantly reduce the cash outlay. We got into the process, we weren't able to actually use the VA loan. And it was like, oh, so the chunk of money that we profited, in order to actually get into this house, we got to put that down.
Put it down.
And me, instead of like having a conversation, I just forced it. Like, out of pride. Like, no, we're down this path. Mm.
We doing it.
We moved the money. So the money, I mean, the equity was there and all of that, but we could have, especially if we had a conversation like, what are we going to be 3 years from now? What would we like to be? Not that we knew, but my career went from Hampton Roads, Virginia to the Northern Virginia, D.C. area. And then that's what my life kind of took off. After I came back from Iraq, all of our life was up there, went overseas and all of that. So I would have, that would have been other opportunities with that money to do something that would have had a greater benefit. Return, or bought in Northern Virginia versus where I was.
Where you was.
That market went crazy.
Dang, it did really?
Yeah.
I know that.
Yeah. North Virginia, D.C. area. They call it DMV.
The DMV,
D.C.,
yeah.
Maryland, Virginia area.
That makes a lot of sense. And I have this conversation with friends of mine all the time. I'm like, should man wait? And how I see it, I agree with you. I think that it's kind of like business. Like, do you wait for you to get money to start a business?
Right.
Or do you start the business? And is that what's going to help you have money? And I look at it the same way with being a family man. Like, is you waiting to be a family man going to elevate you and make you a better man? Or you actually being in that position is going to make you be that man you want to be? And I think it's different for everybody, but I think probably for the average man, I think being in that position where you have that responsibility is what's going to make you be that guy that you want to be. If you got the willingness and the effort, because, you know, you got five and a wife. I can't imagine, especially early on, I cannot imagine your energy at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Because you're dealing with five different children.
Yeah. And then it's more the emotional thing. And that's what my wife, like, we had some real conversations about this, about we had an episode called Default Parent, like who they always go to for certain stuff.
Right.
And she was like, I'm emotionally drained. And I'm thinking, in my feeble mind, I mean, all you're doing is talking to them, not realizing that, oh, she's taking on their problem.
Their problem.
You come talk to dad, we're going to get through it.
Right.
I'm not, every problem is not going to leave with me though. we're going to get to the solution, but I'm not going to necessarily lose sleep.
Right. Cause you go
your girlfriend like somebody else now.
Right.
Now my daughters and their boyfriends, I, you know, that's a different kind of energy. Cause I want to go do something.
Right.
But it's not, like, she's taking all that on. I was like, man, I never even considered that. So a lot of success in any relationship is going to be the communication. Like,
it is.
Like committing to the honest talks about it. And that's something that I wish, if anything, I wish I learned that skill a lot earlier.
You 20 in, you said.
Yeah.
So when y'all got married, you was 25.
I was 25. She was 24. I turned 26 later that year. Yeah.
And I'm sure y'all are probably completely different people from 20 years ago.
I don't even know who I was then. And that's the thing. In that 20 years, like I remember my bachelor party. I remember the wedding. I can tell you something from every year like it was yesterday. You put enough of those together, you look up, it's 20 years.
And it went by.
Pure.
What'd it feel like? If you had to put the years in, what'd it feel like? Do it feel like 20 or do it feel like 10?
It feels like 20, and I'm not saying that's because it dragged, but it feels like I want to honor the accomplishment.
That's dope.
If you play 20 years or you work somewhere 20 years, you don't want credit for 10.
No.
You did that.
That's a big thing.
For that period. So I'm not, like I said, I'm too logical sometimes to, you know, it went by like a, no, it didn't. It went and sometimes, and it came sometimes, and sometimes it was up, sometimes
it was down.
You know what I mean? But I don't regret any of it. And that's not the full measure of it, but I'm saying like, I wouldn't change the pieces that I thought I would change in certain moments. I'm glad it didn't happen.
That's deep.
Yeah.
That's deep. Cause I meet a lot of older couples and they say, you know, we almost got divorced at year 10, at year 8, they had year 49. We like, I'm glad they almost got divorced at year 20.
Yeah.
And like, I'm glad it didn't happen. I'm glad we still here together, especially when all the kids is growing and out the house and they get back to it being them, living their life, traveling, enjoying each other, getting to know each other again.
That's the scary part. That's the scary part is like when you've invested so much in the children and children being successful, then you look up and it starts to reveal where you weren't successful because you didn't allocate the time.
You're right, to each other.
And it's like, man, I want to look up and be roommates.
And then I think that's why so many people say the union you have come before the children. Yeah.
But
we get it misconstrued.
Because so many, enough people agree that it should work the other way.
Right.
That's all
we put the kids first. Yeah.
If enough people agree and you're around those people, that's your truth.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
That's the truth. Man, we, I love this, bro.
Me too,
I hope
me
this,
too.
I hope this one a one and done.
No, definitely not.
Something out, man. But yeah. This is one question I got to get off, especially because it's your first time on the show. The platform is Dear Son, mm-hmm. What I don't often say is what I wish my father told me. Like, that's the premise of the show.
Right.
Having conversations that me and my father, biological father, my only father, get that confused, didn't necessarily have or have early enough so that they're accessible to people who may not have a father, may not have a healed relationship or access to that. But what's one thing that you wish your father told you?
Woo! Let me see. Okay, I'll say this. The one thing, I won't say this is the most important, but this is something that immediately comes to mind. The one thing I wish my father would have told me is about the importance of headship as a man.
Never heard that as an answer. I get it, but
Yeah, like because I'm a believer, right? And I believe as a believer, talk about God, you know, God over man, man over woman, women over children. And society, they skew that and try to make everything, because obviously in the eyes of God, we all equal. Yeah. But there's hierarchy and roles that each of us has to play.
Order of things.
Order. It's order. And it's not, that don't give you the right to abuse your position, or, you know, that don't mean you less than another. It's just God's divine order. And I think a lot of times men, we don't understand that, and we don't take our rightful position, which is why so many relationships struggle, people parenting struggle, is because men, I feel like we don't really understand as a man, this is your duty. This is your God-ordained position to take as a man, which means that you have to be on your A game, P's and Q's as early as possible. Yeah. I feel like if I understood that message, I would have been a better student in school. I would have been a much better team, because I would have understood the importance of me, where I'm going in the future. And I have to build these habits. I have to build these traits right now. So when I'm in a position, when I do become a father and I become somebody's husband, I'm ready for that, because I understood what headship is. And I think so many of us in this common times, we get it confused, where we think that whoever has the money is the leader or is in the head, where the position is ordained by your gender.
Yeah.
The fact that you a male, a man, that means you are in a position where you have to be the leader of yourself, most importantly, but the leader of your family.
Yeah.
Because when all falls, they not going to your kid, they not going to your wife and say, dang, y'all lost y'all home.
Yeah.
They saying, dang, Derek,
What happened? Yeah.
I don't need your wife or your children's opinion. Yeah. How dare you even put that on her?
Yeah.
And I think when you understand that's at stake as a man, as a young man, you understand the importance of taking care of your business, being loving, being sacrificial. Because I feel like that's one of the most important things as a man. We think it ain't about getting everything, living how you want. I think the biggest thing is sacrifice. Yeah. Sacrificing for your girls, sacrificing for your children so they could be where they need to be and live and how they want to live. And we get pleasure out of that.
Yeah.
But to do those things, I think you got to understand the importance of headship.
That's big, man. And the biggest thing that I pulled out of that is preparing all the while. You don't get to be a VP and then learn how to be a VP.
No.
You've demonstrated something that says that this makes sense for you.
Yes.
And we get that in business. We get that in every other application. We get that in sports.
Sports.
I ain't show up for practice. I don't expect to start. Like, yep. we so logical until we not.
That's a fact.
Until we not. So,
that's a fact.
I think that's the one to wind it on, because everything that you do that doesn't agree with that is a detractor.
Yeah.
And call it what you want to, fun, so on, wild, like all that's cool. But if you're not preparing all the while,
he's not preparing.
Oof.
It's what can you, how can you expect it to end if you didn't prepare yourself for this position, and now you in this position, and it, like you said, there's a, it's a lot to it.
Yeah.
And everybody's going to come to you for solutions, for help, guidance.
It and broke. That was the most famous phrase in my house for a good 12 years. It broke.
You don't even need to hear what it is. You just like, man, and they want you, and they expecting you to fix
it. What they're saying is, I need to have one that works.
Yes.
By hook or crook. However you got to do this, Dad.
And nobody's ever coming to you and saying, not, well, some families people are, but nobody's generally ever come to the man and say, Dad, how you feel today? Is everything going all right?
You started a whole nother show. we gonna make sure you're on the next panel, because I was...
That's for real. Like most men, not to say that men are super craving or feeling sad about that. I'm just speaking to how everybody just look at you as the man and saying, you supposed to be all right. You got to be stoic.
Yeah. I got kids that do ask me that. I ain't going to say who.
I know it's the girls.
Y'all can't. Well,
is that
not all of them?
Okay.
I said too much. It's
girls, they love their dads now.
Oh, for sure.
They love their dads. They do not play about their dad. Sure.
And part of it is, then see, I'm going to another episode. We gonna chill. We gonna chill for the camera. Say, Xavier, man, I this was the right time.
Yeah, yep, definitely.
All of it worked out as it was supposed to work out. So, man,
I agree.
I appreciate you making that trek.
I appreciate you having me on.
You ain't have to get a hotel on the way, did you?
No.
I know the man had to.
I had to drive.
Drive the first half.
Yeah. take a nap.
Pass somewhere, man.
No, I was in the city already.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was in the city, and then when I was in the city, I went to go get me a haircut, and then I came. So it's right there. Yep. Okay.
How can people find you if you want them to find you?
So I'm on all platforms. There's TikTok, Instagram, X, formerly known as Twitter, YouTube. I'm at Xavier C. Miller, or you can find me at the Millionaire Mindset Pod, and that's on every platform: Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. Like I said, I'm on every platform.
And that's my fault, because I should have got into that early and out of the way. That platform was big.
Appreciate it.
Talk a little bit about that. What do people find when they come to your it was a Millionaire Mindset?
So on my podcast, we generally speaking about business, investing, personal growth, finance, but I highlight people's stories of people that's entrepreneurships, people in the corporate world that's just doing amazing things in their life and amazing things in business, from people that's hit their first six figures in business to people that's made $100 million to people that made $500 million. So we cover all aspects of business and entrepreneurship. But the foundation of it is just about personal growth, the things that people overcame, and just sharing stories. Because when I started it, when I'm from Chicago, I started in 2018. It wasn't common for people to hear about somebody started this business and they became a millionaire from starting it might have been a sock company or something.
Yeah.
And just putting the information out there, knowing how there are so many different ways for you to get financial abundance if that's what you're seeking. So that's what the show is based on.
Dope. And let me wrap with my normal. Always shout out my wife first. Chocolate Princess, Volume 1. Princess Mocha, this is my wife's book. And she's super dope. And she shouldn't be working a regular job. So that's my goal this year, to undo that. But it's a very good book, very good read.
It looked good too.
That's good feedback.
That's cool.
Matter of fact, I mean, I know your daughter can't read it, but...
We read to her every night.
And then this is a physical copy of my book. It is not the final copy, but by the time this episode airs, the final will be available. So let me just say that, because y'all don't care if it's available, it's available. But Dear Son, 20 Life Prompts to Facilitate Effective Parenting. It is a thought-provoking workbook. Workbook does it a disservice, but what it was birthed from is I started putting up quotes on Instagram, and they were getting feedback. And they were all of my original quotes, just my thoughts, how God was giving me things. And somebody said, man, a couple people said, man, it'd be cool if you organize them into a book, just like a coffee table kind of thing. But what I did was I pulled the first 20, that's Volume 1, and I gave the context of how I arrived at that stage of life through a story.
That's fire.
Right. And then there are questions related and activities related to that specific thing, that life prompt that the reader needs to do. Sometimes it calls interaction with your children. Some introspection. There's some things in there that I challenge you to do that I'm sure you're not most people are not going to want to do.
Really?
Yeah. Like apologize to your children.
Hey, I grew up, you probably did too. Your parents was baby boomers.
What is that in? There are 76. Ooh, hold on. My dad'd be 77. They'd be 77 to 75 this year. So I think
they're baby boomers. Yeah, I think so, yeah. Yeah, my parents, they baby boomers as well. My parents, they in their 60s.
Okay.
And baby boomers, they even got studies on this showing how baby boomers are typically they were the more distant, more less apologetic parents. Mm. Emotionally distant. It's a lot of different things. I can't remember right now that, because I know my parents. No, I ain't throwing them under the bus or none of they see it, but they were different. They were who they were. They not because I'm pretty sure their parents was the same way. Ain't no apologies.
Or different.
Or right.
They might be the transition you don't even know about.
No, for real. You're right. So it's like, you know, it's hard for parents to humble themselves and be like, you know what, I was wrong.
Yeah. This is a tool that'll help you get out your way.
That's dope, man.
And like I think I'll have the by the time this airs, all of the updates to the final copy will be ready. It'll be paper and hard copy available. So
I'm definitely I'm gonna make sure I purchase one.
Appreciate
man.
That, man. Yeah. Always buy black. We're black. So,
yep.
Do that again, man. I appreciate you. I know the audience has got a wealth of information out of this one. So that's gonna do it for this episode. We appreciate you guys. God bless you. Peace.
Hum. The sound of our state's surging manufacturing industry. Our Senator John Fetterman stood strong for workers. He voted to protect Pennsylvania jobs, stop the needless waste of American energy, and hold big polluters accountable. Thank you, Senator Fetterman, for fighting for us. Paid for by Environmental Defense Fund.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.